You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, October 5th, 2022. My name is Emma Vigeland, in for Sam Steeder, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Brian Muir of Brazil Wire and correspondent for Telesur English on Brazil's first round of elections. Later in the show, Aaron Kleinman, a.k.a. Bobby Big Wheel. I love that Twitter handle. Director of Research for the States Project at Future Now. He'll be here to discuss races in state legislatures across the country. Meanwhile, Biden is heading to Florida to stand beside Ron DeSantis and survey the damage done by Hurricane Ian. The death toll has continued to rise. At least 105 people have died in Florida alone. Herschel Walker's campaign apparently knew about the abortion payment allegations for months. One would think that they would have more information on the origins of this lie, if that were the case. The Supreme Court's first week of its new term is off to a scary start for the rest of us. SCOTUS appears likely to uphold Alabama's racial gerrymandering narrowly, further gutting the Voting Rights Act. Speaking of the Supreme Court, former President Trump has filed an emergency request asking them to reverse the 11th Circuit ruling, giving DOJ access to the classified documents Trump stole. Hey, the Supreme Court has helped out Republican presidents before when it comes to election counting, so why wouldn't they do it now?
Would have been nice if he stepped in January 6th, but anyway, never too late.
Supreme Courty come lately. Lauren Boebert's seat might be in jeopardy. Democrat Adam Frisch is a mere 2 points behind her in the latest poll, with the caveat that it is a Democratic firm who conducted it. And other polling news, more and more data comes out. It is positive for Mark Kelly and negative for Blake Masters in Arizona. 6 in 10 Arizonans have a negative view of Blake Masters as a person.
Speaks well of Arizonans.
Yeah. Amazon has suspended dozens of Staten Island warehouse workers, the only unionized facility of its kind within Amazon, who engaged in a work stoppage over a fire that broke out in the facility. It was unsafe conditions, and now they're getting suspended for it. And breaking news, the NLRB has found that Apple violated labor law in an attempt to squash an NYC union, according to More Perfect Union. And lastly, over 1 million people in Somalia are facing famine due to severe prolonged drought. Malnutrition amongst children, pregnant women, reports coming out there, so just more and more of these kinds of droughts throughout the world and the health ramifications resulting from them due to climate change. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome to the show, everybody. Happy Yom Kippur to all who celebrate, including one Samuel Steeder, who is out today. We were kind of trading days. I took yesterday off, and that was very nice. I watched lots of, you know, documentaries and nonsense on Netflix, including that movie Blonde. I know that we have to get to the actual news, but I'm curious about the audience's thoughts, because that was one of the most disgusting movies and experiences I've ever seen. It's not it's not any less misogynistic and exploitative if you use every kind of visual artistry at your disposal as a director. It has a fetus that talks to her about an abortion that she should regret. This is the kind of movie that movie. Anyway, we'll get into that in the fun half. If anyone has seen it, I'm curious about your thoughts, because I haven't been that grossed out by a movie in a long time. Yeah. But that's what I did yesterday. And also what I did was completely engulf myself in the frankly hilarious news coming out of the Herschel Walker campaign. So I'm sure you guys covered it yesterday, but Herschel Walker, the Daily Beast is reporting that that basically a former girlfriend of his got pregnant. He paid for an abortion, very kind of him, according to the Daily Beast, sent her $700 in the mail and a get well card, and she had the procedure because he said that it was not the right time in his life, and she seemed to agree. That's kind of the nature of abortion rights and why abortion needs to be legal and should be legal throughout the country. However, here's the rub. Herschel Walker has said that he does not believe there should be any legal abortions in this country, no exceptions for rape. He's also signaled support for a federal ban on abortion, meaning if he gets elected to the Senate, he would be responsible for voting in such a way. So the stakes of this could not be any higher, and the hypocrisy of it is obvious. And I understand, look, we sometimes try to shy away from hypocrisy shaming Republicans because it's not necessarily the most politically effective tool, and it's one of the easiest empty calories that one can do in this field if you're on the left and engaging in the critique of Republicans. But it's so brazen here that it has to be at least central for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing is, like, if you believe them and take them at their word for what they believe about abortion, this is a guy paying for murder, which is ridiculous, as we know.
Well, I mean, he has admitted to, you know, holding a gun to his wife's head, almost killing somebody during a road rage incident. So it's not that inconsistent if he, based on the things that he's admitted to in the past, if you want to go with that framing. But those two things he's admitted to, he won't admit to this. He's basically claiming that this isn't the case, even though it seems like his campaign, or it's been reported that his campaign has known about this for months.
It's an open secret.
Yeah.
Like the Eric Erickson, was that who it was? Who was like, yeah, I think we all knew this, right? And trying to play it off like it's old news. And it's like, no, this was not on the record. And and it's apparently news, but believable to his son.
Well, right. There's that other element, too. His obnoxious son is using his voice now to turn on his father. And look, I jokingly tweeted, welcome to the resistance, Christian. But like the stuff about, of course, abuse of his mother is that's disturbing. That's disturbing. And Herschel Walker has a ton of skeletons in his closet. But it doesn't necessarily matter for the Republicans. These were the guys that I saw Anna Kasparian made this point. These were the guys that coalesced behind Roy Moore, the Senate candidate in Alabama, who was literally accused of sexual misconduct and
was kicked out of malls
by someone as young as 13 teenage girls. And they were. This is the party that is obsessed with. Here I am back to hypocrisy shaming, but like this is the party that is obsessed with. QAnon being, protecting the world from pedophiles,
right.
But also with saying that these LGBTQ teachers are grooming your kids and they want to make them into a different gender, and there's something nefarious about that. They supported Roy Moore. But the thing about these kinds of Republican voters and evangelical types is that it's about power, and it's about for advocating certain people or activating certain people to achieve that power, and getting there with candidates who are less than perfect is fine. Trump is a perfect example of this. I remember that there was this evangelical leader who was speaking about Trump at a White House faith dinner, and he spoke about how Trump was similar to Cyrus, who's a biblical figure. I'm not that familiar with the Bible. I'm sorry, but he was a flawed person. And so much like Cyrus, Trump, I'm an imperfect vessel.
Don't
you dare call me an imperfect vessel. I'm perfect. But like he's an imperfect vessel for the theocracy that we want to achieve, and that's fine. And that's the same way they're going to view Herschel Walker.
Right.
But here is Dana Loesch kind of making that case. If you remember her, she was at one point going to be the next big thing on the right and somehow disappeared. She was a part of the NRA's media operation. Oh, maybe right. Their financial issues kind of caused that to fold. But she has her new show. I don't even know what network this is on. But she was discussing the Herschel Walker controversy, and she kind of makes a lot of the points that we're saying the right really is thinking, especially their evangelical base. She says here, I don't really care what he does as long as we get control of the Senate.
So does this change anything? I mean, do you want my opinion? You're listening. Not a damn thing. How many times have I said four very important words? These four words. Winning is a virtue. What I'm about to say is in no means a contradiction or a compromise of a principle. And please keep in mind that I am concerned about one thing and one thing only at this point. So I don't care if Herschel Walker paid to abort endangered baby eagles. I want control of the Senate.
Pause it.
If the Daily Beast story is true.
Where does the baby eagles thing come from?
If it's patriotism.
But like that's, she's dodging the issue. You think that he paid to murder a child. That's
infant,
what you constantly
infant baby.
Say. So
yeah.
be explicit with it. Say it with your chest, Dana. Don't retreat into some frivolity about baby eagles. Say what you actually believe about this. And maybe, like, I think there's a certain part of the base who absolutely believes it. I think every political, professional Republican agrees exactly with what Dana Loesch is. But I think, a large number of people who vote Republican aren't this crazy about abortion to put a clearly unfit man into office. So, yeah, anyway, we can go back to
play. No. I mean, your point is well taken there. But this is the same. To draw a comparison to Trump, I think, makes sense here. Herschel Walker could shoot a million baby eagles and baby infants, human babies, in the middle of Fifth Avenue and still get away with it as long as they maintain the Senate. It's clear. And also I think the frivolity about baby eagles underscores the fact that what abortion is not really about babies. It's about controlling women.
Right.
So they can be flippant about it when they're talking about the halls of power and what they need to achieve in terms of the big picture.
And please keep in mind that I am concerned about one thing and one thing only at this point. So I don't care if Herschel Walker paid to abort endangered baby eagles. I want control of the Senate. If the Daily Beast story is true, you're telling me Walker used his money to reportedly pay some skank for an abortion, and Warnock
nice.
Wants to use all awesome. Of our monies to pay a whole bunch of skanks for abortions. And yes, when they're used predominantly over 99% of birth control and it's my taxpayer dollars, you have invited me up in your business and I will use whatever descript I would like to. Thank you.
You're welcome. Classy woman.
Yeah,
it doesn't
yeah.
change anything for me.
Well,
I don't know if we did it or not. I don't even care.
Yeah.
The Hyde Amendment makes it explicit that the taxpayer money does not go towards funding abortions.
It should.
And it should be a part of comprehensive health care. So, Dana Loesch, hopefully one day in my ideal world, you are taxed at an immense rate due to the wealth that you have accrued. And that money goes directly towards abortions. I want there to be some special dispensation for you and in your tax code specifically. I want to write it into the tax code that all of the tax dollars that we take from you in my ideal government goes to women's abortions in particular. Skanks abortions, if you want to put it like that. So, and also, right, like, I mean, talk about a female misogynist. If you get pregnant from your boyfriend and if you're having a relationship with him and you get pregnant by him. You're a skank, and he's the future senator from Georgia. That's how it works.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, you would not be having sex out of wedlock if you weren't a skank. But I'm sure she's engaged in that behavior altogether.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, she was trending on Twitter this morning. This is the most she's been relevant in quite a long period of time. So I guess mission accomplished here for her purposes. But, you know, again, Dana Loesch, I want your money. Please give me your money. I am the big bad government here. I want your money, and I want it going directly towards abortions. Period. That's how my government tax code is going to be written. All right, before we take a quick break, I want to give you a word from one of our sponsors. Breaking news. Finding sales sluggish this quarter? Discover Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Now, Shopify makes it super easy. It makes it simple to sell to anyone from anywhere. If you have a small business, whether you're selling succulents or knitting patterns, start selling with Shopify and join the platform simplifying commerce for millions of your favorite businesses worldwide. With Shopify, you'll create an online store in your vibe, discover new customers, and grow the following that keeps them coming back. So, I mean, you can just make it really easy with the tools that they provide for you. Shopify has all the sales channels sorted, so your business keeps growing, even across social media platforms like TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. And thanks to the 24/7 support and free libraries full of educational content, Shopify's got you every step of the way. I mean, having that stuff consolidated, it's a big deal, because keeping track of stuff across social media platforms on your own without a tool, trust me, it's difficult. Especially in our business, and I'd imagine similarly for other businesses around the country. Every minute, new sellers around the world make their first sale with Shopify. Sign up for a free trial at shopify.com/majority. Go to shopify.com/majority to start selling online today. shopify.com/majority. Sign up for a free trial today to make it very easy for all of your potential customers. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will be joined by Brian Meir of Brazil Wire to talk about Brazil's elections. are back, and we are joined now by Brian Mir of Brazil Wire and correspondent for Telesur English, here to discuss Brazil's first round of elections. Brian, thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So I know you were on Left Reckoning last night. I'm excited to catch up with that as well. But let's just, I guess, start from the beginning. For people that don't know, Brazil's elections were held on Sunday. Lula did finish ahead of the far-right incumbent, Jair Bolsonaro, by a few points. But he did not hit the 50% threshold, which would have won the election outright. What's the level of optimism for the second round coming up in a few weeks? And was it even realistic for Lula to clear the first round with a not just a plurality, but with a majority getting over 50%?
Well, the Workers' Party, or PT, as it's called, has won the presidency four times. They've never won it in the first round. In fact, no incumbent has ever even lost a first-round election until yesterday, when Bolsonaro ended up 6.2 million votes behind Lula. So that was a historic first. Now, during a couple weeks leading up to the election day, some of the polls were saying we're putting Lula at 50%, 51%, but the margin of error was always 2 to 3 points either way. So nobody... hopeful that would happen, but nobody was really surprised that it didn't happen. What people were surprised with was that the votes started being tallied in regions that Bolsonaro is stronger at the beginning of the tallying period. So it looked like Bolsonaro was going to win for the first half of the tallying period, and that freaked a lot of people out. But Lula ended up passing him up, coming out 6.2 million votes ahead, and both the third and fourth place parties have pledged support for Lula in the second round now. So he's in pretty good shape. A lot can happen in 3 weeks before the next election, 3.5 weeks, whatever. But for now, he has the upper hand.
Well, that's good to hear, because I feel like, is there an issue in translation in terms of the English media, that English-speaking media that I've consumed about this? Because it made it seem like it was a lot more of a... a setback for Lula than you describe.
Yeah, it's funny, right? But one of the problems, I think, is that the newspapers are paying less and less money every year to correspondents, and a lot of times they just copy what they read, or, you know, I'm not saying they plagiarize, but they base their analysis on what they read in Brazilian newspapers, which are all right-wing. They're all always looking for a reason to attack the Brazilian left. And so I think the analysis is kind of tainted by that. I mean, they built up Lula to fail over the last couple of weeks. They were acting like it was inevitable that he would win in the first round, but the polling data didn't really back that up. Now, what did happen is Bolsonaro did better than what he polled at, because the third place party kind of imploded, and a lot of the votes that were supposed to be going to Glenn Greenwald's favorite candidate, Ciro Gomes, ended up going to Bolsonaro. But Lula polled right where he ended up getting the amount of votes right within the poll numbers, 48.4%. 48.4%, yeah. So to win, he just needs to pick up less than 2 million votes, whereas Bolsonaro needs at least 7 million, which is going to be hard for him,
Yeah, it is interesting. I've asked Greenwald who he supports, because lots of media critique about how the elections have been covered in Brazil, but not much about who he would support in terms of either Lula or Bolsonaro in the general. I'm still waiting to hear back on that, even though I know he's seen what I wrote to him about. But regardless, Ciro Gomes, the person who you just talked about, what was his candidacy like, one of the third party candidates running? I mean, what were some of these third party candidates running on? Were they all basically spoilers, or what, were there any further left candidates running that took away from Lula, or further right from Bolsonaro? Like, what was some of the landscape with the third party candidates who now are going to be out of the running?
Well, Brazil has like 23 political parties, so it's a lot different from the U.S., and it gets confusing. Ciro Gomez is someone who switched parties five times during his long political career. He's bounced from the center right to the center left to the center. And in 2018, he ran to the right of Lula, to the right of the PT, saying that the Workers' Party was too extremist, they wouldn't be able to govern. And then this election, he said he was running to the left of the PT. And that's the argument Greenwald made when he called up Ewan Hagen's podcast to argue with me for an hour about it, unannounced. So he was attacking Lula for being a baby killer, you know, for supporting abortion rights, which ironically, abortion isn't even legal in Brazil. Not that Lula's against legalization of abortion, but it's a very Catholic country and now more and more evangelical, so it's hard. And he was he spent the last month and a half running these kind of fast-wave, nonsense, like gamer-style TV commercials, basically saying that Lula and Bolsonaro were both flat earthers kind of candidates, and that he was the only rational candidate. And it didn't really work, except that due to repeated continual attacks against Lula, Bolsonaro's campaign started using Ciro's quotes to help them. You know, and a bunch of his voters appear to have switched over to Bolsonaro. So really what his main purpose was driving the election to a second round. You know, so he ran as a spoiler, basically. And even now his party says they're going to support Lula in the second round. And he had to kind of like swallow his pride. So he said yesterday, well, you definitely shouldn't vote for Bolsonaro. You should vote for the other guy. Like, he won't even honor Lula's name.
That's insane. I mean, like, so is it basically widely understood that he was running as some sort of spoiler? It sounds like he's some sort of third way candidate. We see these kinds of types in the United States from time again. But one, is that true? Was that definitely kind of understood to be the case? And two, were there any other spoiler type candidates or was he the main one?
He was the main one. And a lot of people said it from the beginning. Every election that I've seen in the 27 years that I've lived in Brazil has had a third wave spoiler candidate come in. Before it was Marina Silva, you know, before that was Heloisa Helena. There's always someone. Heloisa Helena wasn't exactly third wave, but that's a long story. But anyway, there was another spoiler candidate who came in like 3 weeks before election day named Father Kelman, who claims to be an Orthodox priest, but the Orthodox Church Association of Brazil said they never heard of him, but he dressed like an Orthodox priest. And all he did was like attack Lula using QAnon style, logic during the debates and supported Bolsonaro. So he was meant deliberately to try and irritate Lula, and Lula blew up at him in the last debate. And that may have hurt him a little bit, but not much. But so there were multiple spoilers, really, you know, but here was the big one.
So how did some of the candidates down ballot do? Like some of the former Bolsonaro ministers did fairly well based on my, again, English translated readings of these of the results. But in terms of leftist candidates, others, like what outside of the presidential election, what is your assessment of the results for the left down ballot?
The congressional elections were great. The Workers' Party restored itself to the same level it had in terms of seats in Congress when Dilma Rousseff was president. So this six-year-long nightmare after the coup against Dilma, Bolsonaro, Lula being arrested, Bolsonaro coming to power, and all that, it's like they're back to where they were 6 years ago now. So that was good. And a lot of the newly elected Workers' Party members of Congress are Afro-Brazilian. The party's achieved equity. Brazil's around 52% black, and now around 52% of the elected officials in the Workers' Party are black. Among them, Carol D'Artora became the first Afro-Brazilian woman congresswoman in the history of a very conservative state called Paraná. And she's a former teachers union leader. She's a real leftist, not like an identity politics, neoliberal, whatever, you know, token or something. She's like a committed union activist. And there's many other examples like this. I mean, there was a whole series of Afro-Brazilian politicians in the Workers' Party who were getting death threats from Nazis for the last 3 years. Since Bolsonaro took power, the number of neo-Nazi cells in Brazil has tripled. And they were targeting these black politicians with death threats constantly. Most of them managed to elect up to higher office last Sunday. So that, you know, that was good news all around, really. The Senate's a little harder because, as you mentioned, the Workers' Party picked up two seats in Senate, but some of the most ridiculous clown cabinet ministers of Jair Bolsonaro were elected to the Senate, including Damaris Alves, who, as I said on Left Reckoning last night, claims that Jesus gave her a master's degree. No?
That's a new one. I want to try that.
Accredited University of Jesus.
I mean, Jesus University, right? That's what we call it. I mean, hey, look, that's a bold strategy. but I like, all right, well, that's good. That's good to hear. Because of some of the more negative framing that I was, I guess, privy to from my readings. And, I want to turn to what the second round is going to look like, because Bolsonaro for years at this point has been laying the groundwork for these election fraud claims. And it seems like some of that has cooled recently, and it might be a little bit more difficult for him to actually pull this off. But, you know, he seems to have taken tips from Trump and other far-right leaders throughout the world. What's your sense on the ground of the likelihood of that kind of claim and people actually backing him? If there could there really be a potential coup?
Well, I think now, first of all, him and his people, his sons especially, are in constant communication with Steve Bannon and other Trump operatives like Jason Miller, right? Mike Lindell. I mean, Eduardo Bolsonaro was in the War Council meeting January 5th in Washington. He was one of the people present in that. And they're in constant communication. And on the election day, the Bolsonaristas, his followers, they packed the polling centers with volunteers. I mean, this is a strategy that Bannon's been trying to do in the U.S., right? And what it looks like now is that somehow they slowed down the lines. They slowed down the voting process. And a lot of people just gave up and went home. Because they also left in an unusual move. Alcohol was legal to drink on election day in most of the states. Bars were all open. And Sunday's a big drinking day. So it's like voting abstention was a little bit higher than expected. And a lot of it, for example, in the regions where Bolsonaro is least supported, where Lula's most popular, like Recife, where I live, the lines were like 4 hours. They changed some of the addresses of the polling centers, the week before the election. And so now the left is in this position where if we complain that there was some kind of voter fraud, we'll be accused of being hypocrites, because for the last year and a half, we've been defending the rule of law and the electoral system and the electoral courts. So if that's what they really did on purpose, then that was a pretty clever move. But now the electoral court system, which manages the entire election process, is saying they're going to implement measures to make sure this doesn't happen in the second round election. So that's good news there. But who knows what else they're going to try and come up with.
Right. And I mean, like, now that the results came in and it showed Lula with a few points ahead in at least the first round, does that undercut Bolsonaro's claims of voter fraud, or does it bolster them because maybe it was closer? Like, it seems, though, now that it's going to be just them two, I have one final question after this, but just making curious if you think the first round results directly will have any impact on how these election fraud claims are perceived.
Yeah, I think that they've weakened Bolsonaro's claims because he did better than his polling numbers suggested. He did about 5 points better than the polls said he would. And so it's hard for him and his followers to complain now, you know, and they aren't complaining that as much as we had expected.
Good. All right. Well, lastly, what from your point of view in Brazil, has there been reaction to the United States' response? I know that Bernie Sanders and Tim Kaine had a piece of legislation that passed the Senate, essentially saying that we need to support whatever the voters decide in Brazil. I mean, given the national security establishment's involvement in Latin America historically, is there skepticism that plays into how people feel the votes will be tabulated? Like, how are Brazilians thinking about the United States' role in this election?
Well, the Brazilian left normally hates the United States because of the coup in 1964 and because of the U.S. Department of Justice's role in Operation Car Wash, which is now fully documented, FBI, that led to Dilma's impeachment and Lula's imprisonment. But it seems like because of the political conjuncture right now, the DNC, the Biden administration, would really like for Bolsonaro not to be reelected just because of his relationship with the Trump people and Bannon and all of that. And so I feel like that measure by Bernie Sanders in the Senate was welcome. Most people I talked to down here thought it was a good move. And it seems like it's really kind of like a message from the Democratic Party and the Democratic government to the Brazilian military, which is like, if you go along on an adventure with Bolsonaro like this, we're not going to give you any support at all. So I think that was the importance of it. It was more important for the military than for the, general Brazilian public.
Gotcha. All right. Well, Brian Muir, I can't thank you enough for your time today of Brazil Wire and Telesur. Thanks so much for keeping us updated. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Take it easy, everyone.
Yeah,
thanks,
Brian. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Aaron Kleinman, Director of Research for the States Project at Future Now. We're back, and we are joined now by Aaron Kleinman, Director of Research for the States Project at Future Now, also Bobby Big Wheel on Twitter, one of my favorite Twitter accounts. Aaron, how are you doing today?
I'm great. I'm so glad you had me on so we can talk about how this is the best coached Giants team in 10 years.
Oh my gosh. I know. I'm feeling like, well, they're much less talented than they used to be.
There's no talent.
But no talent.
They're schemed up so well. It's great.
You gotta come on ESPN.
Yes.
You gotta come on our sports
show. I started a sports show with Bradley here, so you can come on anytime to talk about the Giants. I'm all for it.
Well, I'll have time for that after the election, but I'm pretty busy with that.
Right? Yeah.
We'll do it closer to Thanksgiving.
That makes sense. Once the Giants fall from 3-1 to 5-11, then we'll be able to have you on. It might be a little spicier anyway. But thanks so much for coming on because, yes, as you say, you're quite busy with the election coming up. And you guys have invested tens of millions of dollars in state legislature races this year. Tell me about how that came to be and... where are some of your areas of focus are?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the good news is a lot of people on our side of the political spectrum have woken up to the threat that is posed by right-wing legislatures. One of the big catalysts, obviously, is the Dobbs decision, which really hammered home for a lot of people that who you send to your state capital is just so incredibly important because you have, a woman living, on the border between Minnesota and North Dakota, on one side of that border, on one side of the Red River, she has way more rights than on the other side. And in fact, in Arizona, which is, one state I want to really go in a little more deeply, a court there recently reinstituted a territorial law, a law that predates the gunfight at the OK Corral that banned all abortions in the state. And so you're really seeing just how regressive some of these right-wing state legislatures can be. And the other thing that's really woken people up to the threat is there's a Supreme Court case coming out. It's going to be argued over and decided over the next year called Moore v. Harper. And the Supreme Court might actually hold that state legislatures basically have the power to throw out election results. Mm-hmm. And it's just an absolutely terrifying thing for the future of representative democracy in America. And so I think, I'm lucky to work at an organization that's really been able to wake people up to this threat. But we are going up against really a right-wing machine that has really come to dominate state politics that has been built up over decades. And we're kind of just, starting from, going from crawl to run, it can be difficult. And so, we're doing our best, but, we are going up against, just a very entrenched right-wing powers, and we're also going up against kind of the headwinds from midterm where we're for the most part working for a party that occupies the White House, but there are still a number of states that I really want to focus on, and the first is really Arizona. And so, Emma, have you been paying attention to what's been going on with the Arizona legislature at all?
Yeah, a little bit. And from what I've read, the you just really need to flip one seat, right, for this to work out. Tell us about some of the efforts there.
Well, and so in Arizona too, it's a state where the vast majority of state legislative candidates that of right wing ones have said that they're willing to throw out the results of the next election. It's a really frightening moment. But there are a few that have either equivocated or and even one who said, listen, Biden won, get over it. And so that's a state where, obviously flipping one seat, breaking right-wing control would be huge, but really everything we can do there to prevent kind of an anti-democracy majority from taking hold is really critical. And there's actually one race in particular that we are really focusing on right now. It's it was supposed to be a safe Democratic seat. It was an open seat, and the guy who won the primary around the time when he won the primary, he took a job as a lobbyist for a local utility company, and then resigned without telling anyone on the ground. And so Democrats were left, and he's the only one on the ballot. And under Arizona law, he stays on the ballot, but he can't. None of the votes for him count. And so whoever wins the most write-ins wins the election. Now, this all happened in the last few weeks. And so really kind of, you can draw your own conclusions from this man's behavior. And so right now we are trying to start up from scratch to help the candidate Ava Diaz, who's running as a write-in there. Again, she, a month ago was, just kind of a concerned citizen in the district. And now she, is the de facto Democratic nominee. But we need to really fund a really critical write-in campaign because this guy who left to become a lobbyist really left us high and dry. And because of the campaign finance rules, we might be a well-funded organization, but, she can only accept, money in, small increments. So that's really the good race that we're focusing on right now. So if you want to check us out at statesproject.org or check me out on Twitter, we're really trying to direct people to help her out right now. So that's the big focus right now is in Arizona and that race really.
I mean, how do you organize, from your perspective, a write-in campaign that seems to present a level of logistical challenges that are fairly unique for this kind of effort on behalf of a state race?
So we did a lot of research on this. It's what goes into a successful writing campaign, and it ultimately just comes down to having resources, because you really, Arizona, it's a state where you have a really heavy mail-in balloting, not as much election day. And an election day writing campaign is actually a little easier, because people are going to the polling place. You can stand outside being like, "Hey, Espinoza's off the ballot. Please write it in." But now, we really have to go out to, we have to set mail, we have to advertise, we have to do all those things to kind of try to reach people in this district you can't vote for Espinoza. If you vote for Espinoza, your vote gets thrown away. Meanwhile, all the Republicans in the district are going to write in a Republican candidate. And so we really need to make sure that everyone who's paying attention can consolidate behind Eva Diaz. And she just needs the resources to get that message out.
Well, we're going to have a link to all of this in the podcast description and in the YouTube descriptions as well. So hopefully if you guys, if you're in Arizona or if you just want to help out, you can check those links out as well. Let's turn, though, to Michigan and Pennsylvania, because those are also really important potential pickups for flips of state legislatures. Pennsylvania, notorious due to their attempts to overturn the results from their state in the 2020 presidential election. So talk a bit about Pennsylvania, because it's extreme. There's also a gubernatorial election happening at the same time and a Senate election happening at the same time. So turnout is going to likely be quite high. What are you seeing? Does that benefit have you seen some positive signs, negative signs of what's happening in Pennsylvania in the state legislature?
Yeah, well, one great thing in Pennsylvania that we've seen this cycle is we've actually been able to run a program with the House Democrats there, where we are basically funding candidates based on how much they knock on doors. Because really, if you think about a state legislative candidate in Pennsylvania, a state house district has 60,000 people in it, so maybe about half as many voters. And if you think about kind of who you need to reach and kind of who those swing voters are, it's actually a pretty small number of voters. And if the candidate can talk to each of them individually, or as many as possible, that's huge, because nothing will persuade someone more than actually being able to talk to the person that they've seen on the ballot, or having that person in their house. And so it's been great to see a lot of candidates in really swingy seats. Really, they have just been pounding the pavement. They've been going door to door, doing their best to try and kind of really let people know the stakes here. Because like you said, there's a very far right, candidate for governor in Pennsylvania right now. And, he's behind in the polls. But he really kind of highlights where that state party is headed. And for people who are worried about 2024, I do have some good news there, where in Pennsylvania, lawmakers can be inaugurated before the Electoral College casts its votes. And so, even if we kind of fall short in Pennsylvania this year, and we have fair maps, a majority of House districts went to Biden. So we could win a majority in Pennsylvania in a good year. But even if we fall a little short, we still should make gains. It's a 12 seat gap right now that we have to make up. And, also we can kind of finish the job in 2024 in time to basically save the election in Pennsylvania. And so, in Pennsylvania, I don't want to guarantee a majority there, because, Democrats occupy the White House and there are those headwinds, but I think there are fair maps there for the first time in decades. And hopefully that'll set us up to make some gains heading into 2024.
With the Supreme Court case that's being heard about giving more power to state legislatures to determine how votes are counted in the Electoral College, what would that scenario look like if the Supreme Court were to side with conservatives, which it seems likely that they will, in terms of what if that was in place in 2020, what would have happened in Pennsylvania?
It's really frightening. So, in Pennsylvania, the Speaker of the House, for example, he sent a letter to Mike Pence asking him to throw out Pennsylvania's electoral votes. You could imagine in Pennsylvania, in kind of the month following the election, him, trying to basically gather the legislature together and getting You know, so it's 203 seats in the House, so 102 votes to throw out the, and, you know, there are, I think, 113 Republicans. So he could afford some defections and still do that. And then similarly, the Republican leader in the state Senate signed an amicus brief on that very case that you cited. So I think that shows where the state Senate would be going. And again, even though you have a Democratic governor there, even though you have a Democrat leading the gubernatorial election polling in 2022, basically, if the Supreme Court adopts this doctrine, that wouldn't matter. It wouldn't matter what the state Supreme Court said either. You know, basically, what state legislatures are arguing is that they get to, you know, they have the green lantern for politics. They can do whatever they want.
It really is terrifying, especially given the stranglehold that the Republicans have had over state legislatures over the past few decades. But it got even so much worse with the rise of the Tea Party and the gerrymandering that came from that. Let's turn to Michigan, because that's another state where there's a governor's race as well. But the fact that, you know, Michigan seems a lot bluer to me than is represented in their state legislature. What's it like on the ground there right now?
Yeah, I mean, so Michigan Senate's probably our best chance to flip a chamber this cycle, or, you know, definitely it's up there. And that's because,
or the Senate. I keep saying legislature, but I mean, right.
Well,
sorry,
I mean,
keep, yes, but to be more specific,
And that's because in Michigan in 2018, voters passed an initiative that provided for an independent redistricting commission. So, you know, for decades, we've had to run on gerrymandered districts there. In fact, in the 2010s, in the state House, Democrats won a majority of votes every year, except for one, but they never held a majority because of gerrymander. And so that kind of shows you kind of, you know, kind of we have this great opportunity that we finally have fair districts in Michigan. And in the Senate, you know, the maps are a little fairer than they are on the House side. And so that's it's a really exciting opportunity. And then, The Atlantic actually did an article on the Michigan Senate, state Senate elections and kind of what they mean for democracy. And, you know, someone from the state Republican Party, you know, there were quotes from people saying, you know, we're really worried that Republicans are gonna throw out, like, you know, the votes and then cast electoral votes for the party who loses. And he's like, oh, that's just desperation. You know, Democrats are, you know, they're clinging to this, you know, and this is ridiculous. But then they asked him to say, well, are you going to say that you're going to respect the 2024 presidential vote in the state? And he wouldn't do it. You know, and so they're trying to have it. They're talking out both sides of their mouth. They're trying to have it both ways. They're trying to say that, oh, you know, this is just scaremongering. This would never happen. But then they're not saying that they would never do it. And so it's frightening. But, you know, again, in Michigan, too, obviously the governor who's elected on a ticket with the lieutenant governor is favored to win re-election. And then so even if we can just kind of get to a tie in the Senate, that means that the lieutenant governor would break ties. And so we would hopefully, you know, again, forestall the worst there. And, you know, again, and if we can flip the entire legislature, you know, we could actually do some real good in Michigan. So Michigan's a state that I think we're feeling pretty bullish on, especially on the Senate side.
How about some of the other states that you're looking at? I think Maine is one of them, and
yeah.
Nevada is always just throwing everything at you. It's difficult to get, I feel like,
yeah,
some sort of toehold in what's happening in Nevada, but I'm asking you to provide us with some context.
Maine, I think Maine really highlights kind of what you can do through state legislatures as a good thing. You know, for example, you look at the IRA negotiations from over the summer. You know, they tried to get in a price cap on insulin for all diabetics, not just people who are on Medicare, and it failed. But in Maine, they were able to get one for everyone. So now the price of insulin is capped for everyone in Maine. And, you know, and they were able to do that because we helped flip the legislature in 2018. And now kind of the, you know, bombastic former Republican Governor Paul LePage, who kind of like to think of himself as Trump before Trump, is trying to come back. And, you know, there's a risk that he could, and the maps, especially in the Maine state House, a majority of districts went for Trump in 2016. So there's a risk that we could lose the Maine House. So, you know, we want to make sure that we defend the gains that we've made up in Maine over the past few years. And then Nevada, again, it's a state where, you know, you've seen over the past 4 years kind of a lot of laws passed that really improve the lives of people that live there. But, You're facing a potential right-wing wave there as well. We're trying to help some people. And a lot of also right-wing candidates in swing districts there, and the Nevada Independent has done a lot of reporting on this, have really supported, the end of democracy. There, you have, we've endorsed people running against a guy who ran as the Stop the Steal candidate in his primary. Mm-hmm. Another one's running against someone who shared a link to 2,000 mules and said everyone should check it out. And these are candidates running in, like, these aren't, kind of like the far right, in the Margie Taylor Green districts in that state. These are people running in swing districts. And so, again, we just need to kind of get the word out there that these, you have really high stakes in these swing seat elections, not just kind of, them siding with people who believe these crazy things. The people in these swing seats actually believe these crazy things. You can defeat them, and just, getting that word out.
Lastly, how have you guys over at Future Now and the States Project, how have you felt that the Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee, which is supposed to be doing focusing on this as well, like, how have they worked? Have they been, doing a good job? Have you guys been filling certain gaps for them? I mean, what has their investment looked like, especially compared to yours?
Yeah, they're partners of ours. We work together well with them. I think, I have a lot of respect, especially for their leadership and Jessica Post. And I think what they've actually done a really good job, is they have been out there trying to get national Democrats as well to pay more attention to state legislatures. I think it's, you don't irrigate the desert with just one hose. And I think we're playing a role, and they play a huge role. Recently, Joe Biden sent out an email to, the huge list saying, people, hey, state legislatures are really important. We need your help in funding those. And I think the DLCC, they probably played a pretty crucial role in getting that out there. So, we see them as partners. And, anyone out in this space who looks at kind of the crowded political space is like, I really want to make a difference in state legislatures. Even if it's not through us, we're just so happy that people are paying attention and they care and they're trying to make a difference. And we respect the people at the DLCC so much for trying to do that. And we think of them as great partners.
That's good to hear. That's good to hear for sure. Well, Aaron Kleinman, Director of Research for the States Project at Future Now, pay attention to your damn state legislatures, please. And go to the website. We'll put the link in the description to see.
Statesproject.org. Check it out, people. Emma, thanks so much for having me on. Go Big
Blue. Of course. Yes, exactly. I don't see many wins left on that schedule, but I'm enjoying the season regardless. We'll see.
I don't know if I'm going to get up too early to watch that Packers game, but...
I have a mental disorder, so I will be up at 9 watching the pregame and the stupid London game where Davis Webb, the third-string quarterback, is likely to be starting. Anyway, see you later, Aaron. Bye.
Yeah, bye.
All right, with that said, we're going to wrap up the free... hour, the first part of this program, and head into the fun half where we will be taking your calls and reading your IMs. The number is 646-257-3920, so you can call in there. But first, Matt, what happened on Left Reckoning last night?
We had a monster show last night, including Brian Mayer talking about a slightly different conversation where he got into a little bit more about shots at Glenn Greenwald, for instance, not emphasizing the U.S. role in jailing Lula. When Glenn is sort of trying to make the point that actually Bolsonaro is the one the establishment truly fears.
The Economist says so.
And we also had a great conversation with Ben and Melissa about NGOs. And we talked about MAGA communism in the postgame. So if you want to see David and I watch... an attempt to spread MAGA communism at a Trump rally, patreon.com/leftreckoning.
And on ESPN on Monday, we spoke about the Giants, yes, but we also talked about the concussion protocol controversy with Tua Tagovailoa's injury on Thursday Night Football, how Thursday Night Football is a labor issue for NFL players as well as the inability for an independent concussion consultant or evaluator who's being hired by the NFL but not by the team, as if that makes them independent. We talk about that hypocrisy a bit.
It's called regulatory capture.
Yeah, right. And then we also spoke to our first guest ever, my friend Greg Kaplan, who is the host of Blue Shirts Breakaway, which is like a top hockey podcast in the country and covers the Rangers more specifically. But Greg is also a massive Mets fan, I think even primarily so, and he had a mini meltdown, but like a fun one, about the Mets collapse over the weekend and the fact that they are now in the wild card, which was unfathomable a few months ago.
No problem.
Plus some hockey talk as well, and he also gave his preview for who he thinks is going to come out of come out on top in the Major League Baseball playoffs. So check that out, youtube.com/ESVN show, and listen to us on the podcast.
Also, important correction to make at the top of the show, Emma, you made a big error.
What did I do?
Well, what day is it today?
Jesus, why are you doing? Why are you doing? It's hump day.
I can't believe you didn't say it.
Well, you know, I didn't have Sam here reminding me. Just, you know, making sure he's just disciplining labor. Matt's here to fill the role of management.
I'm the aristocracy. What is they call it? The management aristocracy or something like that.
No, you're the security guard at the water cooler, being like, it's been 30 minutes on the lunch break. Back to the factory line.
Hey, hump day.
All right. Anyway, 646-257-3920, justcoffee.coop, fair trade tea, coffee, tea, and chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 15% off. All right, guys. See you in the fun half.
3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now. But I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second. The Majority
Report. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Unpacked. Matt.
Who?
Unpacked.
What is up, everyone?
Unpacked. Nomi Keen.
You did it.
Unpacked.
Let's go, Brandon.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women.
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this 7-8?
Yes.
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm going to go for a ride.
Libertarians. They're so stupid, though. Common sense says, of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say. 857-210-3551. One half. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$3 trillion. Sold. It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less.
But let me say this.
Poop.
You call it satire. Sam goes with satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled, folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock, we're already late, and the guy's being a dick, so screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.